Right. The Dáil recently heard how a Donegal man's life was destroyed by failings by Tusl after being falsely accused of abusing his son and daughter. Donegal Deputy Piers Doherty, you might remember, raised the case and claims Tusl seemingly fabricated the allegations, including the recording of a false confession, which was only brought to the attention of Mr. Porter through a Freedom of Information request. And Mr. Porter is said to have developed significant health problems due to the stress caused by the false accusations dating back to 2010. Tusl has since apologised to William and Mr. Porter. William is now living with both his children. So I'm reading from a script and I'm calling you Mr. Porter, but I have you in front of me and it's William Porter, of course. William, how are you? How are you keeping? How are you now?
I'm not so bad, Greg. One day at a time,
yeah.
As they say, you know. The reason that, first of all, before we start and get into this story, there's a few words I need to say. First of all, I want to thank Piers Doherty. Without Piers Doherty, I wouldn't be here today. I can honestly say he saved my life. And a guy I used to work from the time, Niall Gallagher, who's become a friend of mine. And Niall gave me great assistance too when I was in the real dark days back in 2016 and before. And I've come here today. I'm not here for William Porter today. I'm here in the public interest. Because of a duty to everybody on this island of Ireland. I'm not just chatting about the 26 counties, I'm chatting about the 32 counties, because what has went on here is nothing short of appalling. It's disgraceful. Vile is a word I would use. What has happened over the course of the years, what I've witnessed happen to my family and myself. And, you know, it's just, I'm here in the interest of the people because I've come into contact with people over the last number of years have been affected also by these organisations, and I have a duty to the people to come and tell this story today.
And it's almost unimaginable what you've been through, and also from any loving parent's perspective, it's possibly one of the worst things could happen to you.
Well, we're all set out in a course in life, Greg, and we have hurdles to negotiate, and it's very hard as I get through this story. You know, it was a one day at a time thing, but as the thing unraveled and I seen what was opening up before me, I actually started to question my own sanity times that this could be happening.
Yeah.
I did. There was times, you know, because I got into times where I did not sleep with what went on. And when I get into the thing, you know, the whole thing started really back in 2010. My marriage broke down, my daughter was taken away from home, and I didn't really see her for the first year at all. I only saw her for an hour a week in a cafe in Castledeirg, and I had no real contact with her whatsoever. So this was no good. Rachel was only a wee bit over 2 years of age at the time, and I ended up, I had to go through court to get proper contact set up, and that was very difficult because I contacted a legal firm in Tyrone at the time and they were looking for £600 for one day in court. And in my naivety, I said to the guy, will that sort everything out? And he says, I wouldn't think so, you know. So I couldn't afford to hire legal representation, so I ended up working as a self-litigant myself.
I mean, that in itself, before we even get into it, that in itself, that you are the ability to secure the right to see your children can come down to how much money you have. I mean, that's in it. You know, I mean, that's
absolutely
even the start of it.
Yeah.
That in itself is.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. I did receive help from a man, and he's not with us anymore, unfortunately, a man called Pat Kelly. He worked for a group called Forever Fathers, and he got me schooled to go into court the first time I'd done the OMA courthouse because my daughter had been taken to Northern Ireland, and I had to go through the Northern Ireland system, so I did. And he gave me great help, so he did, Pat, and I'm just, I think about him every day, to tell you the truth, but unfortunately, he died in 2014, so he did. But anyway, I started, and the first time I applied to get contact with my daughter, I remember it was either the first or second time I was up in the court, and I went upstairs, was handing in papers up to the court clerk, and I remember the court children's officer at the time reached me this bundle of papers, and I sat down and started to flick through them, and I started to read stuff on these papers, which I couldn't believe I was reading about myself. And I remember looking across, and there was three PSNI officers sitting across from me. We were in the upstairs part in the court, And I said, if you guys were seeing what I was reading here, you'd be taking me away, mm-hmm. sort of thing, you know. Mm-hmm. So anyway, contact, I got a wee bit of contact set up. I saw my daughter for 2 hours on a Tuesday after school, and we went and done homework, and I got a wee bite to eat, and then I dropped her home for 5:30. It progressed into weekend contact in 2011, going into 2012. And the first weekend that she was back down at home in Donegal, she woke up at 6:30 in the morning, and her room is just adjacent to mine, mm-hmm. Greg. And she came over into me. It was her first time back in nearly 2 years in the family home, you know, and she woke up at 6:30 and she came over and jumped in beside me, you know. And she just woke up. She wasn't, you know, and me and her chatted for a minute and we went back off to sleep. But the next day I went into court. The court children's officer eyed me immediately and she just pointed at me to get into a room in mm-hmm. the courthouse in Oma. And she took me into this room and she says, I believe your daughter has been in your bedroom. And at first I was in shock. I says, yes, she was. She woke up. It mm-hmm. was her first night down. Now, I know this lady's name, but I can't say it, of course. And she warned me that she must never enter my bedroom.
Jeez, what? Well, okay.
And I says, what are you trying to imply
this
happened?
Is, you see, it's even, this puts you in a position that even starting to have this conversation with this person now, it's bringing your mind into places that it would never be, or questions of your relationship with your daughter that you would never have.
Yeah.
It's horrendous, isn't it?
Well, you know, I understand that these people have a difficult job, and especially a court children's officer, because she's taking information from social workers and she's having to do their work and pass yeah. it on to the judge. And I did develop a relationship with this lady during court times. Yeah. And she actually assisted me.
Uh-huh.
But I'll never forget that day, because it really knocked me back. And I assured her, I says, okay, I won't let her near my bedroom again.
Okay.
And I adhered to that. So that was okay, Greg. That happened then, and I'm just coming forward here. Then my contact was continuously broken. Mm-hmm. There was no consistent contact, and there was nobody was doing nothing about it. Now,
so we understand the language here, and we're only talking about your situation, not other parties as such. You were being frustrated, like were you being told your daughter's not available, or
I would have went to pick her up and she wouldn't even.
Okay, perfect. Okay, just so we understand what was going on. Yeah,
and I was relaying this back, but it was getting nowhere.
Yeah.
So my son was so frustrated at the time too, because he wasn't getting to see his wee sister. Mm-hmm. He was living with me, and he stayed with me, of course, when the marriage broke down. And he was so frustrated. He says, "Daddy, you're getting nowhere at all. I'm going to go and speak to these people. They're going to have to listen to me."
Mm-hmm.
So on June the 20th, 2013, Andrew spoke to us. I'm going to call her social worker A mm-hmm. in Derry. And he went in and relayed his fears about his wee sister and about him not getting to see her and stuff like that there. This social worker, he went in on his own, and she showed him no compassion whatsoever. She actually rung me that evening and threatened me on the phone and said that that's a terrible thing you've put your son through there today. I says, I haven't put him through anything. He's not getting seen as wee sister. This is terrible. What's going on? You people need to do something here. So that was okay. We got nowhere. Andrew was very upset. So he was. And that was okay. But
what age was that? What age was Andrew at this time?
16 years
right,
of age.
Right, okay. Yeah.
You know, and moving forward then, this was in Derry where he had this meeting with social worker A.
Yeah.
So this is when it really starts to get going, Greg. In July, the 16th of July, 2013, we got a meeting with a social worker B, in County Buildings up in Oma. And we went up there, and I have to say, this was the most horrific days that I've ever put in mm-hmm. in my life. I've mm-hmm. never witnessed anything I've witnessed mm-hmm. this day. I witnessed my son telling this lady things, shocking things, and she didn't listen to one word that he said. She didn't listen to one word what he said. She turned everything back on him.
Can you give us an idea without going into it? I know it's difficult, but
it's really personal stuff that okay. happened within his life, and I want to try to protect that
understood.
As much as
no,
possible.
Now I understand. So he was
relaying his, very
his
serious
feelings
stuff.
About
absolutely,
understood.
Really yep. serious yep. stuff.
Get you.
And he become upset during the meeting. Now, sitting beside social worker B was social worker C, and mm-hmm. she had her head down. She didn't even engage with us because I don't think she could believe it was happening herself. Mm-hmm. And I can't remember exactly long on the meeting, but I could see Andrew was getting really upset. And I remember putting my hand in his knee. I says, "You're okay, son. I'm going to take you out of here."
Yeah.
And I looked at social worker B and I says, "Just give me 1 minute. I'm taking my son out of this situation." Mm-hmm. And I took him outside and I set him down in something like a seat they got there yeah. in the hall. And I says, "Give me 2 minutes." And I went back in to social worker B. And here's what I asked her. I says, "Are you a mother yourself?"
Mm-hmm.
And she screeched at me, "How dare you ask me that question?" I says, "I'm going to ask it again from a humanitarian point of view. Are you a mother yourself?" And it was the same response. She just screeched at me, "How dare you ask me such a question?" And I said to her, I says, "I just do not know how you can treat my son the way you did." And I got up and I left the meeting, so I didn't. Mm-hmm. We headed home. And he was deeply upset, so he was. The next day, I was working in the shed. I was fireman at the time at home, and I got a call from her on the 17th of July, 2013. And she threatened me that I wasn't going to see my daughter again if I conceded, if I proceeded in the way that I was carrying on. And she then compiled a false report, like what happened down the line with Tuzla. She compiled a false report for the court children's officer. Excuse me, my mouth's getting a bit dry.
All right, take a drink of that. Yeah, I'm surprised it's so difficult to talk about having to go through it all again. But anyway, she compiled a report.
I'm not going to get into the stuff that was on the report, which was read out to a judge in the upstairs part of the court in Oma a few days later. Was relayed to the judge by the court children's officer.
Mm.
And I says, "This is absolute nonsense, what has been said here." I just couldn't believe
it. So what was she trying to get at in that report? Again, without compromising your son's privacy or any information you don't want to share, but just so, yeah. What was she trying, what story was she trying to paint as much as you want to say?
She was working off information that had been passed to her from Women's Aid.
Right.
And she had made out that I had coerced my son to go forward.
So he was like a victim of yours, is the way it was being framed.
Yes, but yet he was still living with me, which was crazy in itself, you know what I mean? So that's what happened there. So that was okay. Moving forward, she's phoned me in the...
So what was the impact of that, by the way? Of her presenting that in the court as was, what was the consequence or what was that being used for? Did that interfere your access to your daughter or is it just something that was placed on the record that would work against you down the line?
It was just placed on the record and I found it very difficult. Although I have to say, and I can say that Judge Sherrod seemed a very fair man. Speaking to him at the time, Judge Sherrod, he was that day. And I explained to him that none of this was true. And he did seem to listen to me, you know. He did seem to listen. But moving forward, it left things very, very difficult for me moving forward, you know. And that was really 2013. That was July. Now, here's Greg. Now, I'm not expecting you to be Sherlock Holmes, but just work this one out. That was in July the 17th. In August, the following month, I got a call from Tuzla to tell me that they're coming to investigate me for abusing my son.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked the guy on the phone, I says, like, what is this all about? I had never had no touch with any social workers in Southern Ireland whatsoever. So he arrives at my door and I ask him, I says, you're telling me that you're here now 3 years after I was meant to have done this.
Mm-hmm.
He says, I'm only here to tie up loose ends.
Mm-hmm.
And I says, let me tell you something, my good man. My son's life is no loose end. And I says, you're an absolute disgrace that you've taken that long to get here.
Mm-hmm.
3 years after the 3 years after this incident that was reported to happen. And that's how long it took him to get to my door. And I says, you better come in because me and you need to have a good chat.
Yeah.
He spent a couple of hours with me and he went away and he came back and spoke to my son on another occasion. I think it was about a week or 10 days later. And when he was leaving, I said to him, I said, are you happy now that my son's, you know, safe with me?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, he says, I'm surely no problem.
Right.
So that was the two meetings we had, firstly with Tuzla, you know. So I knew instantly. I did say to him, I said, look, you've been sent here by Northern Ireland because of the stuff that happened previously in Northern Ireland. And he totally denied it. He says, no, I'm just here to tie loose ends. He said the same thing over again, which it didn't take, if you put two and two
together.
The time
was too...
That was my take on it. That's what I believe to be true,
So do you think, if you are correct in that it was the Northern Ireland people that triggered this Tulsa activity, do you think that any part of it was about child protection, or was this now about having a go at you?
Well, as we get forward, I'll show you exactly what happened.
Am I jumping forward?
What's going to unfold here? And there's a report to back this up, you wouldn't believe this. Right. You would get me sectioned. Okay. That's what you would do.
Yeah.
You know, what you're going
to
hear.
Do you know what? Do you mind if I take a 2.5 minute break?
Surely.
Give you a chance to wet the whistle, so to speak, and then we'll be back with more. Is that all right?
Perfect.
Okay, we're in the conversation with William Porter and his astonishing experience with Tulsa and its equivalent in Northern Ireland. We're going to pick up the story with William after we take this short break. We're still in the company of William Porter, who was falsely accused of abusing his children by Tulsa, and we're going through the timeline of it. And took a break, William, because it is, every time you have to go back through this, it just hammers it back home again, what you went through. We're in 2013, and we've had the first two meetings from Tulsa. You believe, off the back of what happened in Northern Ireland, a representative from Tulsa met with you, then met with your son. And as we were going to the break there, he told you that it was just tying off loose ends. And at that point, he was satisfied that your son was safe with you.
That's correct.
Take it from there.
That's correct. About a month or so later, I got a call from another Tulsa worker to come to investigate the same allegation. And at this point, I was getting angry because this was crazy what was going on. And that's what prompted me to go to Freedom of Information to see what had been recorded about me. And so I did do that, and that report became available to me in 2014, Greg.
Mm-hmm.
So it did. And I'll never forget the day that I got the report. I opened it up, I went into my mother's sitting room, and I started to read this, and I couldn't believe what I was reading. The report read that Mr. Porter has acknowledged and showed remorse for the reported incidents, and had, saying that I'd confessed, like Pierce very clearly relayed in the Doyle last week, saying that I'd confessed to all this. And I remember I sat down my mum's sofa because my legs went weak. I couldn't believe it. And I read it over twice again, and I actually called her. There's a wee hatch in the room.
Mm.
And she come on, she says, Mum, come on in to see this. And she started to read it, and she just could not believe. She just could not believe this.
What extent did they go to fabricate your admittance of these allegations?
Just that I had admitted to doing it, and I'd learned from my mistakes, and I had showed remorse for this. Which,
at that point, again, you're starting to say, am I in some sort of an alternative reality here?
Absolutely. And at that time, I went to my doctor to tell him what was happening. I said, I need help here. Yeah. I needed to go to speak to somebody. And he referred me to a psychologist in St. Connell's down here who I met with 7 times during 2014.
Were you afraid that going through that process could be weaponized against you as well?
No, I needed to speak. I had a couple of close friends I could speak to, but I was chatting them up. This was forefront of my mind all the time. I wasn't sleeping.
Yeah.
And I needed to go to speak to somebody professional to sit down and speak, and I met with that lady down in St. Connell's during 2014. All the records are there to back this up, what I'm saying. So that was okay. And that was taking us into the start of 2014. And my contact was still broken. Now, what I'm going to tell you now, I didn't see my daughter for 38 days
mm-hmm.
over a period of time. And I get a call from my ex-wife on a Thursday to say that I can pick up Rachel on the Friday to bring her home.
Mm-hmm.
For the weekend. And I find this, now there's contempt, obviously, because there's broken contact, there's a contempt, someone has been issued. So I speak to my closest friend, he says, William, there's something going on here, don't do it, wait till you get into court and address the contempt someone. So I rung a legal firm in Derry, and they says, oh, go and pick up your daughter, because it'll be frowned upon in the court if you don't mm-hmm. pick her up. So I took the legal advice,
regret.
I went and picked up my daughter, me and mum, and in Castle Derrick, and I brought her down to the farm, and she stayed with us for over the weekend. We had a great, it was a beautiful spring weekend. I'll never forget it. I got a fella to give me a hand to do me work. And I just spent all the time with Rachel. So I hadn't seen her in so long. And I remember Mum was so delighted to see her when we were leaving Castle Derrick. She was just, she hadn't seen her like in so long, you know. And we come down the road and we had a great weekend. We went into Derry on the Saturday. We got Rachel a wee dress and next for church on Sunday. And we left her home on the Sunday evening. She went skipping up the lane in her new dress, as happy as go Larry. That was okay. On the Monday, I get a call from the Gardaí to tell me that there's been a serious allegation made by my daughter over the weekend that I've punched her four times in the stomach. And I know then by this stage that this is, you know, totally crazy stuff.
Everything's starting to make sense, to the offer, to your friend's warning, to why you shouldn't have taken it legally.
And I actually remember I rung Maureen. I says, "You were right, Maureen. I'm so wrong. I should listen to you more in the future." And he says, "I warned you." So it was clear trap what they had done. The guard said to me, "You can come into us or we can come and get you." And I said, "Look, I'll be in 15 minutes. So I went in. I'll never get it. I walked into the door to the Gardaí, Ban Gardaí. And she says, "I was expecting to see a big monster of a man come through the door." And she smiled and sort of broke the ice a bit, but, you know, in hindsight, it wasn't a great thing.
I know what you're saying, yeah.
So that was okay, Greg. I had been waiting to get into court and I kept ringing up Cookstown to see when this court thing to do with the contempt. And I rung this morning, I forget the morning, I think it was a Tuesday morning. And she says, "You're in court this morning, Mr. Porter." And I rushed up the road in my tracksuit. It wasn't changed or nothing because I hadn't got a letter to say I was in the court. And I remember going up and they were all waiting for me. They were waiting for me. And I remember I went in and a solicitor who was working for a legal firm in Oma at the time, I remember him standing up in the court and describing this terrible incident that had happened over the weekend concerning my daughter and what had happened. And I stood up immediately. I says, "Your Honour, this is a setup. This is an absolute joke. I hadn't seen my daughter. There was a contempt summons issued and this is a clear setup here." And I remember the court took it up. She says, "Mr. Porter, you need legal representation."
Yeah.
And what happened that day was the Gardaí investigation was initiated into the fabricated punching allegation, and that went on for 11 months. And I had to have supervised contact during that time, Greg, over the 11 months. That started in April, and the investigation lasted 11 months until March 2015. But what happened during the time when I was under supervised contact, this is massive stuff here now that I'm going to reveal. When I was in Castle Derrick with my mum, I noticed police were in the area, PSNA.
Mm-hmm.
And we used to sit in the Red Pepper restaurant and they were standing outside the door. And I thought maybe there was a band parade on or something and there was something coming on in the evening. But the first week it happened, I thought nothing of. Second week I got suspicion. And I remember asking the police officer, I says, "Why are you hanging about so much?" But it very quickly became apparent that they were keeping an eye on me. And now my mum was with me at this time. And what really verified it one day was when my son was with us, we went down and my daughter returned to her mother who was working in a shop down the street. My son heard the PSNI officer say to his mum, "Is it safe for us to leave now?" So they were monitoring me while I was in Castle Derrick. And my mum was there. My mum seen this too. Like,
Did you find yourself, even though your mum would want to be there, bringing your mum so that there was another person there, in other words, so that, like, are you twigged at this point that you're the target of
absolutely.
Yeah, so and to have a third person there is a bit of security for you.
I never would have, at that point, I was so cautious, and at that point it got to the stage, even when Rachel was running about, I remember she used to do a wee thing in the garden, she used to come running across the garden to me and I would jump and throw her up in the alleygat. I was even scared to do that at that point.
Yeah.
Because I didn't know what was going to come back.
Yeah.
You know, I was scared at that point. I was really, really scared.
I'm paranoid as well. And,
yeah.
You know, when you're under that level of scrutiny.
So had the police situation. I was in Castle Derrick on one of the Tuesdays and I bumped into a lady who would know the family very well. She's a professional lady. And she says, how are you getting on, William? And I says, not good. And I started to tell her what was happening.
Mm.
And she knew the family very well. And she says, "I can't believe this." And she had knew certain stuff. She says, "I'm going to go forward and tell these people this load of nonsense." Well, I says, "If you want to do that, you can."
Mm.
And she did go forward and she relayed what she knew about stuff within the family to social worker C.
Yeah.
But that information was totally covered up, so it was. There was nobody acted, and this is a professional lady went forward. So they did.
It was buried, or is
it? It was totally buried. And the scary thing about it, Greg, was the lady's husband was verbally attacked by my ex-wife in Castlerigg. The social services actually told her this lady had went forward.
Now, I mean, like, with everything that you're going through, it's horrendous, okay? But I'm thinking of the Tuusula visit, your son having to interact with these people in Northern Ireland, or choosing to, and then presumably your daughter being questioned as it relates to these false allegations were made against you. So you're being victimised here as well, but the impact this is having...
Massive. I can't even get into that. I wouldn't even say, because it wouldn't be fair to them, to say the impact that this had on them.
I know what you're saying, yeah. They could say it themselves when it's right for them to say, but you as a dad, no,
I was watching
it's,
this.
It's not right.
Yeah, yeah. During the investigation, after she had to be... My daughter had to be interviewed by the Gardaí, yes, she would know. And I'll never forget, it was a Friday night, the sergeant in Lifford rung me. And he says, Willie, you've nothing to fear. The only thing this wee girl would say to the people here today was that people are making me say things about my daddy which are not true, and I want to go and live with my daddy. And that was okay. He says, we've not more to do with this. He says, I'm heading away now the weekend, and give your headpiece. He says, this is over.
Still, it was in 11 months.
Yeah, that was in the time frame of 11 months. Incredibly, 3 days later, I'm contacted to say they're going to conduct another interview. And the social worker who's involved in this at the time, who I would call social worker D now.
Right, okay, yeah.
I went to her and I begged her. I says, you must stop this interview. This is child abuse. And she'd done nothing about stopping the interview. My daughter was interviewed second and thirdly by the Gardaí, which was clear child abuse. And in fairness to the sergeant, when he came home, he rung me, he says, I'm appalled that these other interviews took place. This never should have happened. Well, I am really sorry. Mm-hmm. And at that point, we were at a state. Rachel was so upset. I shouldn't even have said that, but I'm just visualising things now. At that time, it were happening. And my mum and I made it our business at that point to go to the PSNI to tell him what was happening in Strabane. And I just wanted to... at that time too, Greg, I was, you know... I'm just looking here at a couple of things.
I'm going to take one quick break.
Yeah.
Because I think we're getting to a very important part of this.
Very important part.
I want you to walk out of here that you feel you've got to say the things in the timeline
that you want.
So I'm going to take a 2-minute break, right?
Thank you so much.
And then you can reset to where you want to pick it up from. Is that all right?
Perfect.
William? Perfect. All right, after these. Just want to continue my conversation here with William Porter, because it's just important that William gets the space to timeline this correctly. I need to get the ads out as well, William, so it kind of works for both of us. But come here. So where do you want to pick up the last stage of...
I finished up by saying my mum and I took the decision to go to the PSNI in 2015.
Yes,
that's
correct,
and it's great that you give me the chance, because there's a couple other wee points I need to put it in happening in 2014 as well. My mum and I went to social worker D with letters to her about what was happening and the effects that this was having and what was going on. And she still done nothing. Now, she had been told by both children what was happening and everything, and she threatened us that she was going to have Rachel putting into care. Mm-hmm. She threatened me and my mum. During that time also, we had a meeting with social worker C, and she told me and my son at a meeting that she wanted to disassociate herself from what happened at the meeting back in 2013. Mm-hmm. The social worker, she said she wanted nothing to do with it, and she was washing her hands.
That's the one that was very upsetting for your son?
Yes.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah. So moving then, that's the two wee points that I want to put on there. And then moving then into 2015, we went to the PSNA and we sat with a guy in there. I remember his name. His name was actually Nigel. And we sat with him. We told him everything that had happened. And he just sat shaking his head in disbelief at everything. So we did. And he says, leave this with me. and I will do something about this for you because this is absolutely disgraceful what's going on. And at that point, I had got in touch with the inspector of the police too, because I was keeping them up to date what was going on here all the time, you know, a man, but that, I'll finish up the story when we get to that. But anyway, that was okay. He done his work. He went and contacted social services and they brought in another source of order. This is after, of course, the guards had come back. No investigation. There was no prosecution against me. It was all a load of nonsense. The thing was totally fabricated about the punching. Mm-hmm. And that was done. That was dead for them. So their attack on me didn't work. It backfired on them, actually. So it did. So what I believe happened then, Greg, they sent in social worker E. This is the fifth of social worker mm-hmm. who was involved in working with the children. And she rung me and she said she wanted to meet with me. And I only agreed to meet with her if I asked the questions and she gave me direct, straight answers in relations to the work of the previous four social workers. Mm-hmm. And she agreed to do that. Mm-hmm. And I have to say, fair play there. She held her hands up on every question I'd asked her. Mm-hmm. And she says, there have been massive mistakes made. I want to speak to your son. And I says, social worker E, not a chance would I let any of you people near my son after what you've done to him already. And she says, I would ask you to consider that because go away and consider it, she says, William, and come back to me. And I went and spoke to my son. And God bless him, he says, I will speak to her if it's going to help me, wee sister. Mm-hmm. This terrible situation that she's in. And a meeting was set up with my son and social worker E on the 10th of April 2015, Greg. And it was a huge, I'll never forget that day as long as I live. She come to the farm and she met my son and they spoke in the conservatory. I was over in the shed working at Spuds, excuse me. And it was meant to be no longer than an hour, she said, but I came over after an hour, but they were still in talks. And I went away and they met with each other for up on 2 hours. And when I came back, I could see Andrew was upset. So I could... And he went down the hall in the house, and I'll never forget him walking down the hall in the house, and he went into his room. Mm. And I looked at her, and I asked her a question. I says, I'll call her social worker E, but I got to know this lady very well. I met her on 12 occasions. Mm-hmm. I says, what have you done to my family?
Mm.
And here's where her words. We have conducted a witch hunt against you, and we have tried to set you up, and I do not know how you've endured to get to where you're at.
But at the same time, as difficult as that is to hear, it validated you and everything that you knew, every argument you were made, you know, what you knew.
Yeah.
Someone within the system was recognising it. Was there any relief in that at all?
Or was it just
anger that right now you know what I've been going anger.
How do I say it, Greg? There was a relief because Andrew said to me with tears in his eyes, he says, Daddy, this lady's going to help us at last.
Mm.
And she did to a degree. Of course she did. Because she started to compile a report. She met with the children numerous times and she'd done up a report that fully supported Rachel coming into my care. So it did. And that was, you know, that was a massive day. And when she was leaving, she says, apply for a residency order.
Mm-hmm.
I says, how can I apply for a residency order when I'm classed as a child abuser in Southern Ireland and I'm a monster and in front of Judge Sherrod to be false mm-hmm. allegations about me. And she, at that point, she says, do it. Do it. And like I was left bewildered that. So I did approach a legal team and we did apply for a residency order. And at that point, I did tell her, I says, now my daughter should be brought straight back into my care because this was totally fabricated, mm-hmm. this allegation. You know, it was crazy. At that point, I felt that she should have been brought under my care. And fair play to her, she did admit to me down the line that that should have happened there and then.
Yeah.
And my daughter shouldn't have been left where she was for the next year and a bit, you know, sort of thing. So,
Go ahead.
Yeah.
If you want to go into that other thanks, Donald.
So, at that point, we were running out of court a lot of times, and the legal firm we were working for, I had applied a legal firm as I was instructed when I stood up and tried to defend myself. when the punching thing was brought out in the court, I had a legal team working for me. They weren't doing as I was instructing, and I got rid of them. I told them, you aren't saying what needs to be said, yep, in the court here, what has went on with all the stuff that went on. And I got rid of them, Greg. And I'm just refocusing here again, but
do you know
keep
what
going
you're going to do? You're going to take 2 minutes for the news to refocus, because
that's okay.
And then I'm going to keep you about 4 or 5 minutes after the news. Is that all right?
That's okay, Greg. We're getting there. We're getting there.
It's really important. Okay.
Yeah.